The Book Nook on WYSO is made possible by five local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Clark County Public Library, the Dayton Metro Library, and the Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and it's my pleasure to welcome to the program today Kristen Lepianka. She joins us by telephone from the Columbus area. Hello, Kristen.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me.
Kristen, this must be very exciting for you. I understand that this book, The Last Place You Look, is your debut.
That is correct. It is my first novel. It is the first in a new mystery series that is set here in Columbus, which I'm also really excited about.
Yeah, what is it? You know, we look at the big cities in the country. We look at New York and Los Angeles and Chicago, and there's all kinds of crime series that are set there, but not too many in Columbus. Are you trying to fix that?
Yeah, I mean, I've been a reader of the mystery genre for a really long time, and I always noticed that there are, you know, the big East Coast or West Coast cities, or even Chicago, they have tons of series that are set there. And even some smaller cities wind up having a lot, such as, you know, Memphis, et cetera. But Ohio is really kind of an underserved market.
We seem to have a few in Cleveland and Cincinnati, but you're right. I can't think of too many in Columbus.
There's one other written by Andrew Welsh Huggins. He writes about a disgraced Ohio State quarterback turned private investigator. But as far as female-led series, I can't think of any that are in the Columbus area. So I'm really excited that I have gotten to put one of those out into the world.
How did you decide to create it? What was the process?
Well, I've been writing for a while, and though this is my debut novel, it's the fifth manuscript that I have written. And I think in my early manuscripts, I was sort of figuring out what I wanted to do and finding what my voice was. And by the time I got ready to write this, I really had decided that I wanted to write about Columbus, and I wanted to write about a tough, complicated, but still vulnerable female detective character. And I really just wanted to write the kind of book that I had always wanted to read. There's a great Toni Morrison quote about that, you know, write the book you've always wanted to read. And I've never quite read something that's set in Ohio. It's got a really complicated, troubled, but very smart heroine, and just the genre in general leaves a lot to be desired, I think, as far as treatment of women goes. So I really wanted to explore that, and once I had those elements in place, the location, the type of character, it really just sort of wrote itself, to be honest.
Kristen Lepianka joins us. Her novel is The Last Place You Look. What are these omissions, these defaults that you're indicating exist for strong women characters in this genre? What are they?
Well, a lot of mysteries are, we have so many male detectives. There are definitely female private investigator characters out there, of course, trailblazing people like Sue Grafton, Sarah Paretsky. There's, you know, a lot of them, but the genre definitely has more male detectives, and I think a lot of it is really rooted in sort of the origins of the mystery and crime fiction genre back in the days of sort of pulp fiction and books that we call noir now, where women were relegated to damsel in distress type characters or the evil femme fatale. They weren't given a lot of personal agency. They weren't really given enough credit to solve mysteries, to save themselves. So I think that kind of thing has sort of continued through the genre. There are just threads of it, even now, so much later, where women just don't get the same billing as male characters do. And that's not to say that there aren't, you know, lots of good mysteries to read that have good female characters, because there are. They're just not enough, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
And I'll bet you read them, too. I bet you read a lot in this genre.
I do.
My guest is Kristen Lepianka. Okay, let's talk about your PI, Roxanne Weary. Who is she?
So she is a the daughter of a police officer who was recently killed in the line of duty. She is bisexual, and she has had sort of a troubled relationship all her life with her father because of that. And now that he is gone, she's really struggling with what that means for her now that she doesn't have the option of ever fixing that relationship. So ever since his death, she's been lost and not really sure what to do with herself. And the case that is the focus of the book finds her at a kind of a bleak time in her life where she hasn't been working much. She's been mostly drinking Crown Royal and staying at home. And she takes this case that really gets her out of her funk. And it's sort of the type of case that really only she can solve because it winds up being tied back to a case that her deceased father worked on 15 years ago.
You really do have a classic noir opening with her sitting there terribly unemployed, underemployed, and hasn't really worked for 9 months. And then suddenly she gets this phone call, and she's like, I don't know if I want to. Well, wait a minute. Look at my bank account. It's really kind of a classic. It's like an homage, I thought, when
yes.
I read it.
Yes.
And then you mentioned her drinking. Of course, in this genre, we're accustomed to the hard-drinking detective. But, you know, I think she must be the most hard-drinking detective that I've encountered in a long time. This woman has a serious problem.
She does. She does. She drinks a lot, and if you asked her, she probably wouldn't say she has a drinking problem. She'd say she has an unhappiness problem. She hasn't really quite put it together what her problem is. But I think you're right that there are a lot of hard-drinking detectives in the genre, but they're almost always men. And that was something that I wanted to play with, too.
You're right. And it's almost a cliche. It's almost a stereotype. And that's, I think, why you push it so hard, because if I'd kept a tote board of the number of drinks she consumed, I think it would have been in the 100s easily.
It is possible that it would be that many.
And she thinks about it a lot. And, you know, she's, oh, am I really thinking about having a drink at 9 o'clock in the morning? But she's troubled. She came from a family that was fairly dysfunctional, and maybe it's genetic. You know, her dad seemed to have a little problem with the sauce, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that she grew up in a house where drinking was so commonplace that she tried her first sip of whiskey when she was just a kid because she was curious what it was that her father liked so much. And she just has a really unhealthy relationship with alcohol, in part because of the way that her household was, the way that her father was always drinking. But also I think it's her escape from her life because she's not in a good place. She's not happy. She doesn't really know what to do with herself because so much of her identity was as a person who has a bad relationship with her father. But now that he's gone, that relationship is not going to get to have any sort of, you know, resolution or conclusion. It just sort of stopped. And so that's really thrown her for a loop.
And in a way, that's what this story is about resolving things with her dad.
Yes.
Without giving anything away, of course.
Right.
Kristen Lepianka has joined us. Her debut novel is The Last Place You Look. It's set in Columbus, and she joins us on the telephone from Columbus. The modeling that your PI got as a child from her family, she has relationships, but they're troubled. They're slightly dysfunctional. I don't want to give much of this away, but her relationship with a particular man who shall remain nameless is confused, and there are a lot of underlying issues there which you unravel very slowly for us. And then her relationship with this woman. I love this female character that is her sort of love interest. She's a very interesting character.
She's so hard to describe without sort of getting right to the heart of what makes her so important to Roxanne, but also so bad for her. But she knows what she wants much more than Catherine, or much more than Roxanne does. And she is very forthright and determined. And I think Roxanne is a bit bewildered by her. She's someone that Roxanne has known since high school. So it's sort of been an on-again, off-again, long-term relationship, but it's had its very dramatic ups and downs, and I think Roxanne is caught up in the fact that when you've known someone for a really long time, it gets very hard to know exactly what your feelings are about that person because there is just a sense of familiarity that I think it's confusing. You can't always tell if what you feel is love or attraction or if it's just familiarity and comfort. So Roxanne is very confused about her feelings towards Catherine. She's very confused in general. And so I think these two relationships really, they're part of why she's struggling so much. But at the same time, if you asked Roxanne, she would say that these types of relationships and sex in general is a stress relief, even though it's actually adding to her stress.
Mm. Can we tiptoe into the plot?
Can we?
Okay. I'll let you do it. I don't want to give away stuff.
Okay. So Roxanne is hired by the sister of a man named Brad Stockton. He is currently on death row serving, waiting for his execution for the murder of a married couple, the parents of his girlfriend, which took place 15 years ago. So he's been on death row for 15 years. His execution is coming up in a matter of weeks. And all along, he has professed his innocence. And so his sister hires Roxanne to take a final look at the case to see if there's anything she can shake up because the girlfriend, Brad's girlfriend, the daughter of the married couple, she went missing the night that they were murdered. She hasn't been seen since. And all of a sudden, right before Brad's execution, Brad's sister thinks that she's spotted the daughter here in town. Mm-hmm. And so she sees this person and she thinks, if only we could find her and get her to tell the truth about what happened, my brother could get off death row. And so that's really the opening for the story, and it leads into much bigger than just one murder in the suburb where all of this is taking place.
You just mentioned this sighting at the gas station as being here in town. Now, I didn't Google this, but I'm wondering, the suburb where a large portion of the action takes place is something that you've called Belmont. Is this a real suburb? Or I'm guessing it's not because there's some really bad things that happen
there. Exactly. It is not real. I created my own suburb because I didn't want to malign the good name of any of our fine suburbs here in Columbus, because all of this messed up stuff does happen there. So it is sort of a mix of Gahanna and Groveport.
Oh.
It's not a specific place, and it's not based on a specific place, but geographically it's located near where Groveport is. And as far as the layout of the streets, that's sort of based on Gahanna. That's where I grew up.
Oh.
So, but it's definitely not based on any specific place. Uh-huh. It is a dark place of my own invention.
I'll say. Can we talk about the police force in that little town? Is this a kind of a stereotype that you've created, or is there real stuff that's happened in the real news that you're basing some of this on?
No, they're just really the classic, you know, private investigator meets up with this uncaring bureaucracy. I'm sort of exploring that idea, and they're a suburban police force in a large metro area, but they are kind of small-minded, and there's a sort of secrecy around the town, certain residents who will remain nameless at this time, who have the protection of the police. And so they're not honest with Roxanne. They're not honest in their dealings with citizens. And that's not based on any particular police force or any story. That's just sort of what I wanted to do as far as giving Roxanne this kind of nemesis as the police force who's trying to keep her from getting to several different truths that are buried there.
Mm. Kristen Lepianka joins us. Her novel is The Last Place You Look, and it's set in Columbus. She joins us on the phone from Columbus today. When we get down to it near the end, when we have the big action scene, man, you really, really build that one up, and you have the action down in this thing.
That is so good to hear.
I mean, I read the stuff like candy, so I got to give it to you. You laid it out.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I really wanted it to build to like a not just one of those kind of wah-wah endings where you find out who's behind it all and then everybody goes home. I wanted it to be like a big, suspenseful explosion type of ending. And I also really wanted it to be scary. Not just for the reader, but for Roxanne. I wanted her to face something that was really terrifying, something that she couldn't drink or joke her way out of, something that she really had to center herself and just get through, something that would leave her sort of changed at the end.
One of your main characters in this story is a spoiled brat rich kid. And
yes.
You really had fun with this character, I could tell.
I did. I think that everybody knows people like this guy, and I just drew on some various people that I've met in my life, just kind of spoiled rich kid who never had to face the consequences of anything, never had to work hard, and they just have a demeanor that just, it sort of invites you to mock them, I think. So I did have a lot of fun.
My guest is Kristen Lepianka. What are some of the authors that you admire, that you like to read?
As far as mysteries go, I got started in the genre reading Robert B. Parker and Ed McBain back in the day. Those were my early favorites. And some of the more current things that I'm enjoying, I really like Tana French's novels, the Dublin Murder Squad books set in Ireland. I think those are fantastically written and very suspenseful. And I also love Joan Didion, which is pretty far from the mystery genre as you can get, but just her prose is incredible.
She's a classic. Well, we never had Parker on the show, but if you go back onto the Book Nook archive on our station website at wyso.org, you can hear an interview I did with Ed McBain.
Oh, really?
About 16 years ago. And it was really an interesting interview. And we've had Tana French on a couple times, too. So you like the psychological stuff.
Yes. I tend to like stories where the main character is really put through something hard, not that detached sort of Hercule Poirot-type detective, but a character that really gets in there and struggles through an intense mystery.
Mm. The book is The Last Place You Look. Kristen Lepianka joins us. You mentioned at the outset that this is going to be a series. Does that mean that you've got some more already written?
Yes. The second book in the series has been written, and it is currently with my editor. So I think that will probably be forthcoming next year. And then after that, that would be up to Minotaur Books if they'd like me to continue. I would love to write 1 million books in this series. I have so much fun writing in Roxanne's voice, and I would just really like to continue it as long as I can.
Minotaur is really a great imprint for this type of fiction.
Yes.
And they have some big names, and they also bring out a lot of debuts like yours.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get the deal? How did you get booked with them?
My agent, who has represented me since the fall of 2015. She is the one who made this deal happen, so I'm super grateful to her for that. And Minotaur was definitely like my first choice because of the reputation they have for putting out amazing crime and mystery fiction. And I know a lot of writers have a long story of, oh, I submitted this manuscript to 100 agents and I finally found someone after 10 years and then they sold my book after 4 more years. I don't have that story. This actually, it all happened very, very quickly for me, although I feel like I always need to say that I have gone through the rejection trenches of being a writer before, so it's not like I haven't been there with other projects. I had gone through that. But as far as with this manuscript, after I found my agent, we did a couple rounds of changes between her and me, and then she submitted the book to editors she knew in January of last year. And by the end of January, we had signed the deal. So it all happened very fast.
Well, I have to give it to you. This is highly polished, and you've really got some chops.
Thank you.
The book is The Last Place You Look. Kristen Lepianka wrote it. Okay, it's your first book. That means you probably have been working real jobs in the real world while you dreamed about being a published author. What kind of stuff have you been doing? What do you do?
Well, I am a graphic designer, and I, until recently, have worked in sort of corporate marketing environments. And in a strange turn of events, my job was eliminated from the company a couple weeks ago. So it was sort of like the universe telling me, now this is your time to focus on writing. So that's what I'm doing at the moment. But design is what I've always done as far as the day job situation.
The old your problem is an opportunity syndrome?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Well, good for you. I think they did a nice job on it. Did you have any input on the cover?
Well, so when we started talking about the cover, my editor asked me, do you have any ideas? And I gave her like probably way more ideas than she actually wanted to hear from me because, mm-hmm. I mean, I am a designer, so I can't really help it. And so I gave her this list, and then I didn't hear anything for a really long time, and I was starting to wonder, what is going on? And then she came back to me several months later with a cover that was very close to the final version. And I just, the concept with the face and everything, that was all Minotaur's idea, and I love it. I just made a couple tweaks about the colors. The original colors had been more orange with like a light blue type on my name, and I wanted them to make that a bit cooler, and so I made that suggestion, which they did immediately, which I really appreciated, and that is kind of how we got that.
Darker. It's darker.
Yes.
You also got quite a little assemblage of blurbs here. How does that work? How do you get a blurb from Sophie Hanna?
Well, I am being published simultaneously in the UK from Faber and Faber.
Oh.
And I think all publishers sort of do this differently. My U.S. editor asked me for a list of people who I'd like to blurb me, and I gave her a list, and she just handled it on her own. I know a lot of publishers will have the author themselves do it. Sometimes maybe they won't even ask who you want to do it. But so my U.S. editor asked me, and then my U.K. editor just sent it out to people without asking. And so Sophie Hanna was one of the people that blurbed it for Faber. And then because the deals are sort of connected, we used the blurb for the U.K. edition on the U.S. one as well. And I'm very excited about that Sophie Hanna blurb. I feel like it's almost like having Agatha Christie blurb your book.
Almost.
Yes.
I wonder if they sent a galley to Tana French.
She was on my list to my U.S. publisher, but I don't know if they – there's always a lot of, like, weird behind-the-scenes business stuff that goes on in publishing about, like, oh, this person, you know, is from – this person doesn't blurb people. This person you have to send a letter to via carrier pigeon and you know, wait to hear back. So I'm not really sure, but I'm very thrilled with the blurbs that I've received for the book.
Well, these – people are probably so inundated with requests for blurbs. And while some of them are extremely generous with blurbs, I think Lee Child must blurb about 500 books a year.
Gosh, I know. I see his name all the time on things. How does he have the time?
But he's so generous.
Yes.
He helps so many writers that are completely unknown.
For sure.
And I think he really does read the books.
Yeah.
And then you've got someone like Gary Steingart. Are you familiar with him?
I am. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's right up there with Lee Child. I don't know how he does it. But you got a great blurb from James Renner, who's a writer I admire. Do you know him?
Yes. I put him on my list of people I'd like to blurb after I had read his book, True Crime Addict, which has a bunch of interesting parallels to my book, completely like by coincidence. But I also was familiar with his work through his blog about the Maura Murray case.
Mm-hmm.
And so he'd been on my radar for a while, and I've met him, and we've corresponded. So I'm really grateful that he was able to read the book, too.
Well, we had him on the show for his most recent novel, The Great Forgetting.
Mm-hmm.
And he indicated during that interview that he's kind of over the true crime for now. He's sort of burned out on it.
Hmm.
I guess it just sucks you dry. I mean, it's particularly because he's been trying to solve these disappearances. He's actually been trying to track down the people who committed crimes.
Right. It has to be it's a very dark place to go, because as a writer, when you are writing fiction, you can pull back when things get too dark for you, but you don't have that option in reality, of course.
You're listening to The Book Nook on WYSO on 91.3, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world. And I've been joined on the show today by Kristen Lepianka. Her debut novel is The Last Place You Look. It is a thriller, a crime novel set in Columbus, and she joins us on the phone from Columbus. The second book, did you say it's in the editing process right now?
Yes.
And what is Roxanne up to in the second book?
Well, she is in a bit of a better place when the book starts, although that changes because she's in for another pretty intense case. And she has taken on what seems like a very straightforward, not super interesting investigation of trying to prove that this woman is cheating on her fiancé. And it turns out there is much, much more to the story than that. And it really expands in a way that brings in her whole family.
You mentioned a few businesses like coffee shops and bars in this story. Are any of these real?
Yes, they are almost all real, I think. Unless it's something that's located in Belmont, it is a real place. A lot of them are centered around the downtown Columbus area. And it was really fun to include those, just because when you read a mystery that's set in a city where you don't live, like, there's, you know, various names of bars and restaurants and establishments, and you see that and you're just like, okay, that's the name of the place. But as far as a place that you actually recognize, I think that'll be really fun for people who are familiar with the Columbus area. And the places that Roxanne goes that are in Columbus are generally my personal favorites as well as hers.
What kind of response are you getting to the book so far?
I am getting this is just the most surreal experience, but I am getting a very positive response to the book. Just yesterday, I was at Gramercy Books in Bexley, and the cashier asked me for my last name so she could look up my rewards account. I was buying a puzzle, and so I gave her my last name, and she said, "Oh, are you Kristen?" And I was just, like, so shocked by that. And she told me that she had read the book and she loved it, and then she showed me her name tag where, you know, the employees of the bookstore have written their favorite books for the summer, and she'd written in The Last Place You Look, and it just blew my mind that this had happened.
That is very cool.
It was. It was. I asked her if I could take her picture. I was just so amazed.
How fun. Well, it's really been a pleasure talking to you about your book.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to The Book Nook, and my guest has been Kristen Lepianka in her novel. It's her debut, featuring the world-weary Roxanne Weary. The PI is The Last Place You Look. Thanks for listening.